This is the Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every Thursday. And this week we are going to look at upcoming releases, The Heat and White House Down. We have spoiler-free reviews of Man of Steel, This is the End, and VHS 2. Our From the Outside In topic this week, the worst film villains and their awful plans. We're going to have the latest movie and TV news as always, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson, and with me today are my fellow hosts, Scott Clark.
Hey, what's going on, man?
I'm wishing I could watch hockey right now.
Yeah?
No, not really. And Brian Williams?
What's up?
Not much, recording a podcast. And Justin Mocumber. I'm going to start calling you Mocumber from now on.
I wouldn't advise that.
Because then your gangster personality is going to take me out?
That's right.
Did you guys see the Anchorman 2 teaser?
Yes. Oh, my God.
What are your thoughts? I'm curious. The trailer is sweeping the internet. It's not the full trailer. It's just a teaser.
Well, first off, they call it a teaser trailer. This is like the third teaser trailer for this movie. At what point is it a real trailer?
But the first two were just those guys standing in front of a stage making really dumb jokes that I didn't think were that funny.
Right.
This is a little bit more. It's actually showing clips from the film, including a lot of racism.
I laughed out loud when I watched this. I was dying laughing. I can't wait to see this.
What did you guys, Brian, Justin?
It's all right. I didn't think it was, I don't know, overwhelmingly funny, but I got some chuckles.
I love that they're moving from the 70s into the 80s a little bit. That's just brilliant.
Well, the only thing about that makes me hesitant is I don't want to start entering into Austin Powers land where it's the guy dressed out of time with everyone around him. And that's what I liked about Anchorman and Ron Burgundy and all those other characters was that 70s style. Mm-hmm. And I don't suddenly want them to be surrounded by people in parachute pants and thriller jackets. I hope that that's not kind of a route they're going to go, because we've seen that before many, many times.
Hang on. I'm liking the idea of parachute pants and thriller jackets everywhere.
Not in an Anchorman movie.
All right, fine.
Because he has to be the stylish one. I mean, that was kind of, you know, one of his character traits, that everybody looked up to him because he had that, you know, that look, that mystique. And if suddenly, they, you know, they're out of date, then it kind of turns them into a laughingstock within the framework of the movie, which that's not what the first one. We laugh at it, but not the people who are around him going, man, he is so cool.
Well, maybe salon quality hair.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he'll update, and we just haven't seen that yet.
Maybe. I hope he has a VCR. Maybe a Betamax.
I like his 70s look, though.
Yeah.
Somebody, I asked Scott this before the show. Why is it Will Ferrell can do all kinds of racist jokes and nobody says anything, but any other white comedian tried to do that and he'd be under a heat lamp?
Well, I think it's because he's not being spitefully racist. He's being, I'm a dumb idiot racist. I mean, there's kind of a difference. He thinks he's.
Is there a difference in terms of racism?
Well, he's saying comments that are racist, but he's not doing it because he is racist. He thinks that he's bridging the gap or something.
And I mean, obviously, the main humor with his character is that he's just
oblivious.
Ignorant.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just kind of like saying oblivious to the world around him and how it's changing. And now that's why his sexism stuff worked with the first one. And hey, where else are you going to go? Got to go to racism. Racism's funny. Sorry.
I mean, we're not talking about a Michael Richards kind of inward rant.
No,
right.
No.
On stage. Here.
No, right. Not quite. Also, real quick, the After Hours 3 we already recorded goes up on June 24th. That's all about gaming. So if you want to check that out, it's actually pretty interesting. We talk all about gaming. So if you like video games, it'll be interesting to listen to. Let's go to movie news. Marvel has confirmed there will not be Loki in Avengers 2. You guys at all bothered by that?
I'm fine with it. I mean, they're Marvel. They're introducing a whole lot of other characters between now and then. So, I'm sure there's going to be quite a sufficient replacement at the villain position, so to speak. I don't really care that we're losing Loki, but honestly, I do miss the fact that Tom Hiddleston himself, the guy that played Loki, won't really be part of it, because I thought he brought such a good mix of likability yet also kind of a hateability with mm-hmm. that Loki role.
And plus, we will see him in Thor 2, so.
Yeah. All right, well, that's enough Avengers talk. The creator of BioShock, if you guys have ever played that game, the story is, it's well-renowned for its story. Ken Levine is apparently the guy that was behind it, and he's going to script a long-awaited remake of Logan's Run. Is this good news or what? Because I really don't know at this point.
Well, Ken Levine actually started his career as a screenwriter and a playwright. So doing something like this goes back to one of his original loves, which is, you know, film and theater. So I don't think that this is a case of someone who is completely unfamiliar with an art form, or, you know, whatever, however you want to phrase it, and just suddenly coming into it with his name maybe being enough to get his foot in the door. He's done it before. Apparently Logan's Run is a film and a book that he is quite a fan of, and making a remake of it is a bit of a passion project for him. So if you're going to have someone involved with a property, you want people who are going to bring passion to it. And he seems to be the one. So, you know, I've enjoyed all three of the BioShock games. I think the story and the writing in them has really been exceptional. So to have him come on this Logan's Run makes it a property that I had zero interest in to, yeah, I'm actually kind of interested now to see what this guy's going to do. I'm interested to see what this is going to end up as.
Now, Logan's Run, wasn't that about that life stopped at 30? Wasn't that
21?
No, I'm pretty sure it was 30.
No, I'm looking at it right now. And it's about a dystopian society where people are willingly executed at the age of 21 as a means of population control. Those who try to escape their fate are called runners. In the film, they did bump it up to 30.
Okay.
I was looking at the book.
Oh, so snap. Hang on. Is this the part where you say, Aaron, you're right?
No, we were both right.
No, I said the movie, so
no,
I'm right.
Well, in the book, it's 21, which the book always trumps the movie.
So we're not going to admit you're wrong? Is that what you're saying?
No.
I'm just going to keep going?
I will not.
Oh, my God.
So there you go. Back to the major 30 in the movie.
But basically the movie is about you die when you're blank number of age.
30. I believe I've said that.
Yeah, I believe you did. So,
and if you run, you don't do it, you're a runner. So.
And so the purpose of this movie is this guy runs.
Apparently
Logan.
So.
Logan.
But he's also one of the ones that's chasing after guys initially, isn't he?
Oh, so it's kind of like a Minority Report.
Yeah.
Oh, now I see where they're going. I never saw Logan's Run, so I honestly don't know anything about it.
I didn't either. I didn't read the book, but it sounds right up Ken Levine's alley as far as the tone and the atmosphere of the BioShock game. So I'm very much on board.
All right. Well, there's a couple of change-ups. Sin City 2 has been delayed a year to August 22nd, 2014, and Ryan Reynolds has apparently bowed out of Highlander, so apparently there can be more than one.
I'm not too concerned about the Sin City being delayed. I know it's been a while, but that just gives me more time to...
Telling you, bro. I hear it in my head. You're going to have to hear it, too.
I can wait a couple months. It just gives me some time to rewatch the original again.
That's a lot of months. That's almost a year.
August?
No, yeah, but it was supposed to come out this year.
Yeah, my bad.
Don't worry.
We don't need to
read the articles here.
I can wait a year and a couple months. That's fine. But I think the
Were you reading the book? Is that what it was?
Yes. The Ryan Reynolds story with Highlander is a little more interesting to me because the director that was supposed to do it, is it Carlos Fresnadillo?
Okay.
I'm pronouncing that correctly. He parted ways with Summit because of creative differences and whatnot back in 2012. And
hey, I'm still here. Just to let you know. just want to let you know that.
Still, maybe you should do a periodic check-in.
Still present. Yep.
Sorry, we lost Brian during part of the recording, but we're back now. So go ahead, Scott.
So what's being said is that Reynolds' exit might actually be a positive thing, because what they're saying is rather than having this director kind of mold the movie around Ryan Reynolds' character or his demeanor for all that, he can kind of start from scratch with a fresh actor.
And he can cast it with whoever he wants.
Exactly. So it'll be more his film. So I think the idea that a fresh director starting from scratch is good. The big question is, you know, who's going to play Connor now?
I think Justin nailed who I think it should be.
Yeah.
You want to share who you think it should be?
Oh, I said Gerard Butler.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Gerard Butler, I mean, he is Scottish, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, Highlander with that fucked up lip, I'm sure will work great. Look at Scott, he's pondering.
Real nice.
I know, I'm classy.
I love the original Highlander. I think Gerard Butler's a lot bigger than Christopher Lambert.
Whenever they do this reimagining, it doesn't have to be the same kind of guy. I mean, they can go a different route. And he's...
Well, the trick is the villain has to be
bigger.
More imposing than the hero.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Butler's like 6'3 or 6'4. I mean, he's a big dude.
I have no idea. I don't have his stats in front of me. All right. Moving on, Sony has gotten so cocky with their Spider-Man reboot. They have not only locked down the dates for Part 2, they locked in dates for Part 3 and Part 4, June 10th, 2016 and May 4th, 2018, respectively. And by the way, this was just released. Mary Jane, who was apparently shot scenes for Part 2, has now been completely cut out of Part 2 and will be saved for Part 3.
Well, as far as the two new sequels being announced, yeah, it's going to be 2016 and 2018. Apparently, Sony is quite happy with the footage that they've been seeing for the second film, which they say has given them the confidence to start putting out these dates for the two additional sequels. I have to wonder how much of that is really, oh, we love these dailies we're seeing, and how much of it is more, fuck Marvel, we're never giving them back Spider-Man ever so they can kiss their ass. We're going to make movies with Spider-Man till long after the Avengers Phase 10 is done with. So
I think that's pretty much what most of it is right there.
Because
the only way they keep those rights is if they keep making Spider-Man movies.
Right, which they're going to keep doing. The question comes in, though, you know, how many villains does Sony have? Obviously, they've got the Green Goblin and the Hobgoblin. In this new film, they're going to have Electro, you know, played by Jamie Foxx, and Paul Giamatti's playing the Rhino. So you've got those two, Sandman, Venom. Okay, so are they going to bring Venom into this one? Are they going to come up with some new villain out of scratch? Exactly how many do they own? Apparently in Hollywood, these contracts don't have to say because nobody fucking knows anymore who owns what. But yeah, they're going to keep making these movies until we are all long dead and they're just being played for robots. I don't know, though, whether Mark Webb, who directed the first Amazing Spider-Man and is directing the second one, if he's been, you know, contracted for the third one and the fourth one, or if it's going to go on to a new director.
Not as of yet. He signed on for Part 2, but he isn't sure if he wants to do Part 3 and 4 and 18 yet.
Right, which, you know, it wouldn't be a crime if someone else came in to direct. We all really liked Iron Man 3. It was directed by someone, you know, Shane Black, who didn't do the first two. So it's not something that's going to kill people, just depending on who they cast. But as far as Mary Jane Watson being cut out of the film, I don't quite understand how you can write a script that has a really important character to the Spider-Man mythos in it, shoot scenes with her in it, and then cut her out. So obviously she wasn't a big part of the film.
Mm-hmm.
If she's not a big part of the film, then why have her in it? I mean, was it just a couple of scenes setting up her for whatever sequels they were going to do? And if that's the case, that's kind of weak shit. If Mary Jane's going to be in it, don't have it be just some brief out of the corner of your eye kind of cameo. She needs to be a big character, and a big character can't be written out of a movie this late into its production without major rewrites. So I'm not quite sure what happened there. It sucks for the actress.
I was just going to say that. I'd like to feed be her right now.
Hey, guess what?
You know that Shailene Woodley is playing her, and apparently they're going to be recasting for the third film.
Oh, so
potentially.
She's getting fucked in more ways than one.
Potentially. They aren't 100% sure on that part yet. But
well, that's what I've read, and that's what I'm having to go on. But they're supposedly going to be recasting. She may stick around. Who knows? But there you go. No Mary Jane Watson in the second film. They're sticking with Gwen Stacy, though. Who knows if she'll make it to the end?
I'm with you. I thought Mary Jane was going to be pertinent to the story. Like they were going to play some kind of triangle or something. Having her be in it and then cut her out is exactly what Justin said. That means she didn't matter. So fucking, you shouldn't have had her in the script to begin with.
So are they gonna, when you say they cut it out and they're going to hold it off for the third film?
Yeah,
are they gonna
actually Mary Jane will be in the third film, but just they're cutting her. I don't know if they're going to use the scenes. That's what they're debating or whatever.
They had enough, you know, love triangle action in the last set of movies. So I'm glad they're kind of staying away from that, apparently. So.
Well, maybe
sorry,
the script.
It was two guys and one girl versus two girls and one guy. So whatever. Come up with something different.
You better stop hating on Raimi's Spider-Man. You understand? Seriously.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Topher Grace. That's all I got to say.
Drop the mic.
Son of a bitch. You better stop hating on the first two Raimi Spider-Man. All right. Just a quick update. We talked about it last week briefly. Dumb and Dumber 2, spelled T-O, which apparently Warner Brothers said we don't want any part of. Well, they were already picked up by Universal, so the sequel is happening, and it revolves around them getting to Jeff Daniels' daughter's wedding.
I figured someone would pick it up pretty quick, and kudos to Universal, because I think it's a winner. But I said it before, I'll say it again. If that movie opens and it does not have a shot of a pet store called We Got Worms, mm-hmm. I'm going to already be sorely disappointed.
Really?
Yeah, because that's perfect. It needs to be there.
Maybe it's become a huge like Petland type, you know, cross-country
either way,
huge
whatever.
Franchise.
I don't think it will, but We Got Worms, come on. It's a similar setup to the first movie too. It's, you know, a road trip buddy comedy,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, sounds like.
It could be hilarious, but it does smell a little bit like Hangover 2 sequel, a little bit. Same story.
I mean, pretty much. I mean, old. They're older. So it's like the really old Hangover.
Yeah.
It's really sad, kind of. I hope it works, because if it doesn't work, those guys are done in terms of comedy. And we want – Brian, why don't you take it?
Wow. Easy for you to say, man. Just before we started recording this podcast, some news broke about a big loss for Hollywood. James Gandolfini passed away due to a heart attack while in Italy earlier today. So our condolences to his family. We wish him all the best. I don't know. I know Justin and I were fans of his work with The Sopranos. I mean, you were a pretty big fan of that show, wasn't you, Justin?
Well, yeah. I mean, over the course of how many seasons was that show? 6 seasons?
No, I think it was like. I think it was eight, but I think the last 8 or 9, but I think the last season was cut into 2 different parts. That's kind of when that trend started. So.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the whole idea of gangsters comes from The Sopranos. I know for a lot of people that
really?
Maybe it was the Godfather, where they really got their first dose of gangsterism, or Goodfellas. Gangsters really hadn't been a part of my entertainment lexicon for a long time. But when I started watching The Sopranos, that's when I really started getting into it. And so for me, that will always be what I think of when it comes to mafia TV and movies. And James Gandolfini, of course, is Tony Soprano, the head of the family. For me, he's my godfather.
Our condolences to their families, if they're listening, which I don't know why they would be. I wasn't a fan of The Sopranos, but he was a great character actor. So
kind of a minor movie. I loved The Mexican, and he was in that movie. I thought he was great in that movie.
He was in Crimson Tide.
He's been in a ton.
He was so good in True Romance.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great character actor. I wish I could have got into Sopranos. It just didn't click for me, but it did for a lot of other people. So.
Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park. All right, if watching Man of Steel isn't enough to motivate you to work on your abs, get ready for the sequel to 300. It's called 300 Rise of an Empire. Picks up right where the first 300 left off. Spoiler alert, Xerxes defeats the heroic Spartans at Thermopylae.
What?
I know.
I didn't see that coming.
So anyway, Xerxes and his army march south on their way to eradicate those pesky Greeks. First up on his agenda is Athens. Athens's strength is their navy, while the Spartans' strength is their army. So the two city-states forge an uneasy alliance to try to stop the overwhelming numbers that Xerxes brings with him, both on the land and on the sea. I know you love the Zack Snyder look of these movies, Aaron, so I say that with tongue-in-cheek.
Sarcasm, I hope.
Yeah.
300 and Dawn of the Dead are the only two Zack Snyder movies I really liked prior to Man of Steel. But this looks like – it's hard to explain. It looks like they're emulating his style. And I know he produced it, but he didn't direct it. They're selling it like he's directing it. He did not direct it. But it looks like he directed it.
It does.
It's almost the exact same style. It's almost the exact same photography. It looks beautiful. It looks very similar. So I think you're going to go into it thinking it's a 300 sequel. But it just didn't get me the same way that the original 300 trailer did. I guess I didn't feel any connection to it whatsoever. Does that make any sense?
Well, other than it looked very much like it, that was
It looked just like it, but it just didn't feel the same. I don't know why. Maybe it's been too long since the last one, and that was very much a novelty.
Well, I think a lot of what made 300 feel like 300 was the performance by Gerard Butler. I mean, he really was the meat and potatoes of that movie, I think.
Yeah, and they show him in the beginning of the trailer. I was kind of hoping he was just going to get up and be like, I'm good.
Just a flesh wound.
I was just playing dead while everybody just walked right over.
That would have been genius. What a genius plan. But no, he's still dead. But Lena Headey's in it, so that was cool. She's starting it off, and I guess we get to follow the really freaky-looking guy, Xerxes.
They've got the same guy playing him who played him in the original 300 as well, so that gives a nice sense of continuity.
I hear he's free. I don't think he was doing a whole lot. He was probably waiting on this.
No, I think after being killed off on Lost, he's probably just been waiting around for
everything. Six degrees of Lost, really.
Uh-huh.
Jesus, Justin.
But no, I kind of understand what you're saying. As much as it looks like 300 and smells like 300, it doesn't feel like 300. And I think the reason for that is that kind of what Scotty was saying, the original film was very much focused on the Gerard Butler and his Spartans. This film seems to be a bit more spread across between the ocean and the land. It doesn't have that sense of focus mm-hmm. that the first one did, but it looks phenomenal. So mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to be seeing this. My expectations are a little lower than they were for the first one, though.
300 Rise of an Empire opens up on March 7th, 2014. So we got a little bit of time there to kind of make our minds up on that. Anyway, next up, Scorsese, DiCaprio, McConaughey, names like this mean one thing, and that's a huge movie. Put them all together, mix them up with some money, some women, some excessiveness of the 90s, the mob, and even the FBI, and you've got a hell of a cinematic concoction that would make the most scrutinizing of cinephiles excited to drop their 10 bucks just to watch DiCaprio play his modern-day Gatsby again.
Did you pay somebody to write that?
No, I actually went to dictionary.com, like thesaurus.com.
Just looked up
I did
a lot of
work just for those couple of sentences.
Nice job.
Thank you.
I didn't even know
so
you
Scotty,
could read.
What'd you think about this new Wall Street? Is this like a new Wall Street for the new generation or what?
I'm so stoked. I saw this trailer and just wanted to stand up and cheer. Welcome back, Martin Scorsese. We haven't seen anything from him in a while.
We haven't seen anything fun from him in a while.
Yeah, that's true.
I wouldn't.
Would you say that it's been a while? It's been a while.
God, Jesus.
We got to pay Aaron, whatever that guy's name is, a bunch of money.
Him and Kevin Smith, because he does it on his.
It just looks awesome. And you guys grew up in the 80s. The 90s was my heyday. Like, so anything that's set, I don't see a whole lot of movies set in the 90s. You really don't. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the music and that, and just, I mean, I love Leonardo DiCaprio. I can't wait to see this movie.
I think it looked fun. Matthew McConaughey, I'm telling you, is becoming my favorite actor on screen. Seriously.
Really?
Everything he does is more interesting from film to film to film.
I got to go see Mudd then. I really do.
He's just so, he's such a good actor. Damn it.
Do you think he falls into that last real small group of movie stars?
McConaughey?
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know. He seems more of a character actor these days than a movie star.
I think he is more of a character actor. I think he took a lot of the movie star roles for paychecks and whatnot. Now I think, you know, he's pretty cemented in who he is.
And just kind of does what he wants at this point.
He kind of does what he wants. And his career wasn't doing that well for a while, so he started doing these little parts, independent parts, and his career is taking off again. I mean, he just got the lead in the Christopher Nolan movie, Interstellar. I look forward to seeing that because I'm telling you, everything I keep seeing with the guy from movie to movie to movie has been better and better. And this looks even better than Mud. I mean, it just looks like he has fun doing everything. I think he takes out the garbage and you just would love to watch him do it.
Well, only if he's shirtless and playing bongo.
I'm sure
with
he
a
is.
Joint just kind of hanging out of his mouth.
He probably is.
You know, I first really came to like him in Contact. That's when he really first surprised me with his ability to play a role. But I got to say, I didn't like the tone of this trailer. It didn't feel Scorsese to me.
Not one little bit.
It felt more like a Coen Brothers movie.
Catch Me If You Can is what it reminded me of.
This looked sillier than even Catch Me If You Can did.
See, to me, it had notes of like Goodfellas. With the lead talking, you know, talking to the camera, explaining what's going on or what he's thinking, that kind of stuff.
Seemed a little more, it's almost slapstick than anything I've seen Scorsese do, and it threw me off a little bit. I can't say I'm interested in this one.
The one thing I will tell you is that anytime I see a trailer where Leonardo DiCaprio looks like he's having fun, it's always a movie I want to see. Because he doesn't do it ever anymore. And when he does, it's almost always a movie I enjoy. So,
He's not doing some stupid accent.
Yes. I think he's learned. I haven't seen him do an accent in a while.
And I will say that movies watching Wall Street guys rise and fall, again, I've seen that a million times. So that's even one more reason I'm just not all that interested.
If he had a cape, would you want to go?
And shot people with like eye lasers? Maybe. Maybe
flying some spacecraft around.
Art, now you're selling me. Come on.
And he's like, his exhaust is nothing but $100 bills.
Ooh. That'd be fucking all right. Now that's a movie I'll go see.
Space economics.
The Star Wolf of Wall Street. I'm in.
I like it. Star Wolf.
That's right.
Oh God. Here we go.
Mm-hmm. Pitch.
Trademark.
Pitch it.
Create a sci-fi movie on
Kickstarter. Kickstarter. Let's do a Kickstarter.
Star Wolf.
For an idea.
Star Wolf.
Oh, well. Anyway, the opening bell of The Wolf of Wall Street rings on November 15th later this year. Did you kind of see what I did there?
Yeah, we see.
All right. Just checking. Make sure you're still with me here. I just, you know, I lose you sometimes. So
maybe if you paid for a fucking broadband connection, you cheap son of a bitch.
Oh, you want to go on cheap. Okay.
Just because you don't get paid, don't make it an issue, Brian. Let's go.
Shut up. I got some promotional shit to do here, all right? Just shut it. So as if like magic, all these trailers are already up on the HollywoodOutsider.com. So go over yonder and watch them a lot. Do it now. You've got a lot of ways to reach us. You can call us or text us now at 818-814-6246 or 818-81-I'm-A-Ho. Email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Go on to facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Post some messages. Click the like button. All that stuff. Tweet us at @H_outsider. And you can still get your official I'm a Ho t-shirts at thehollywoodoutsider.com. What's next, Aaron?
Stump the Ho.
Stump the Ho. Wait. What? Shut up.
Yeah.
Hold up.
Stump the Ho. Oh, what? Huh?
Each week, one of our hosts poses a trivia question to the remaining hosts in an attempt to stump their
fellow.
Brian's
been drinking.
He has been. I wish he'd share.
No, but I need to start.
This week, it is Brian's turn, as he's already told you, because he can't wait. So, Brian, what is your question?
And when did you make it up?
He's still looking for it.
This is, you know, I spent a lot of time writing that one little bit, that one little paragraph, but I spent even more time drumming up this question. All right. So in addition to the Man of Steel, Henry Cavill was the runner-up to all of these roles except for one. Which one? Was it Christian Bale's role as Batman, Daniel Craig's role as James Bond, Chris Hemsworth's role as Thor, or Robert Pattinson as the twinkly vampire in Twilight?
Scott, you can go first.
Aaron, Scott, go first. Daddy said so.
And it's his show.
Jesus. You've had your moment of silence. Shut up.
I'll say Edward from Twilight.
All right. Justin.
I'm going with Thor. I don't see him as Thor.
I'm going with Twilight.
All right. And the answer is Thor.
Ooh. Fuck off, dude.
Wow, man. You're so angry.
Yeah, I mean, crazy enough, he was actually in the running for Batman, James Bond, Edward from Twilight, and even the Brandon Routh version of Superman.
Yeah. I knew all those. I didn't know Thor or Twilight, so I had to guess. I knew the other two, though.
Get Edward.
Yeah. Like a lot of your life decisions, you picked wrong.
You chose poorly.
All right, guys, let's go to the big screen. We've got a few movies to review, and one of them is Justin's most anticipated movie of the year or the summer? I wasn't sure.
Probably the year.
All right. Well, tell us about Man of Steel.
All right, guys, really, what more should we say? We've talked endlessly about it, but Man of Steel, produced by Christopher Nolan, directed by Zack Snyder, written by David Goyer, starring Henry Cavill as the Man of Steel, Amy Adams as Lois Lane. It's a reboot of the entire franchise. It starts off on Krypton, just like the original did, but from there on, it pretty much bears no similarity whatsoever to Richard Donner's original Superman film. You know, I think that's about all that needs to be said. Guys, first, the story. Did you like this take on the Man of Steel origin story, or did you feel like it could have done more, or maybe it should have done a little less? And Brian, I'll start off with you on this one.
I really liked how they did it. It wasn't, I think most people know the basic gist of how Superman came to Earth, how Kal-El, Superman, Clark Kent, whatever you want to call him. However, he came to Earth and his basic childhood and what he becomes. But I thought what they did a good job of doing was explaining more of what happened on Krypton, and then really kind of jumping back and forth once the movie kind of gets going, probably half an hour, maybe 45 minutes into it. Once it gets going, it kind of flashes back to, you know, to some scenes later, all pretty much throughout the rest of the movie. So I kind of like that. Like, okay, we know, it's almost like they say, okay, we recognize the fact that you know who he is and where he comes from, but we're going to tell the story, but we're not going to make you wait an hour and a half, because this is a 2.5 hour movie. Mm-hmm, we're not going to wait for, we're not going to make you wait till the very end for all the action to kick in. We're going to start this action early.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I like that about it. I don't know what you guys think.
I really enjoyed it a lot. It is slow. It has some slow moments, but in me normally, when movies like that at 2.5 hours that kind of drag a little bit, I'm bored out of my mind, but I was soaking up every minute of this movie. I don't know how it would fare with multiple viewings for me. I haven't seen it a second time, but that first time I was at the edge of my seat throughout the whole movie. Even the slow parts, I was just enjoying the origin, enjoying the flashbacks, like Brian said. I didn't have any problem with it, but again, I've only seen it the one time.
The story is pretty straightforward. I mean, and the villain ends up being, well, you know, it's Zod. It's in every commercial in the world, so I'm not spoiling anything. But I really, even though I thought it was a little much, it was a little bit too much like episode one, I liked how they fleshed out Krypton. That was, mm-hmm. that was really cool to see that world, because all I've ever seen of Krypton was the Superman movie original, which was not known for its spectacular special effects,
mm-hmm.
at least not now. The flashback parts, I thought were a little sloppy and jumbled for me. They were a little too all over the place. If they had been a little bit more focused, it would have worked better for me. But they came together in the end, so overall, it worked fine. It was a pretty straightforward origin story.
From our offline discussions, though, Aaron, you said that you felt like they lingered on Krypton a little too long. Do you still feel that way?
I feel that they lingered. They were there too long, yes. But it wasn't enough to really take me out of the movie. I liked how they fleshed it out, but I thought it went on too long, and it was too busy.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like that they at least fleshed it out. They at least showed you the world, because that was the one thing I really hated about the first movie, is they made Krypton into this giant ice palace that made no sense to right. how they can have any sustainable life. This looks like a livable world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looks like a dying world.
Well, you know what I
yeah,
mean.
Yeah, I get exactly what you mean. It's a lived-in world.
And right, there you go.
It's not just some big cue ball floating in the sky with a domed city that is really all you can see where the Kryptonians live. I frankly could have taken even more of Krypton. And a lot of that has to do with Russell Crowe's performance as Jor-El. I thought he was, and we'll get into the acting in a moment, he really carried that for me. I loved the technology on display. I loved everything about Krypton. And I really loved that now we had a reason for why General Zod and his people were sent off to the Phantom Zone. It didn't just start off with a quick trial where you get no information, really, and boom, they're gone. But you see why they were being punished, what their cause was, and what motivated Zod through the rest of the film. So
yeah, and can I add real quick before?
Yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off, but the one thing I was really impressed with in terms of the story, and I understand the story is pretty simple, and it's very, very much a simple take on Superman. It's not that complicated. But the way that they paint Zod is his main priority is to protect the people of Krypton. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's his mission. I think he gets a little one note with it. You know, that's when I'll get to the action a little later. But I do like that they at least tried to justify why this man would want to do what he does.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, you know, in Zod in the previous movie, he was just like world domination. That's really all he felt like. Like here, it actually feels like I want to protect my people at all costs.
You almost feel for him a little bit.
That gets into the acting, but I'll get there. But I feel for his plight. I see what he's trying to do. At least makes sense to me.
But, I mean, he actually, and I don't know if you want to, maybe you want to edit this out, whatever, I don't know. But he actually says in the movie that he was bred for one reason. And that was, you know, to protect Krypton, right. And so
that's not a spoiler.
You know, and like I said, I mean, kind of to your point about that's his motivation and stuff. I mean, he's basically a guy with blinders on. Here's what mm-hmm. this is the best way I see how to do this, and you're standing in my way.
Anybody that knows anyone that's in military management, I would say, knows that this makes sense. It really does to me anyway. So I got what they were going with.
Well, what I love, though, is that it really showed Zod and Jor-El as two sides of the same coin. Both of them have the same goal in mind, and that is to continue Krypton and Kryptonians in a fashion or another. But how they go about doing that are completely different. Zod is he's a member of the old school. He's as Brian said, he was genetically engineered. Every Kryptonian was genetically engineered, but his engineering was for one thing, that was to protect Krypton and through military means. Jor-El, being a scientist, has different ideas about what it means to protect Krypton and its future. So I liked seeing them at odds with each other, but I like the little hints that they weren't always at odds, that these guys weren't always fighting each other, that, you know, once upon a time there was, you know, a friendship there, maybe some admiration and respect. So I thought it was really well done. I did find the flashbacks to Clark's youth a little jarring on occasion. I feel like we didn't get enough sometimes of, especially, and again, we'll get to the acting in a minute, but Kevin Costner as Jonathan Kent, I feel like we didn't get nearly enough of him because he was really, really good. And so I wish there had been more of that. But even so, I'm glad they didn't wait, you know, forever and a day to get the real action started. They sprinkled the exposition throughout the movie, and I definitely give them credit for that. So I really enjoyed the story, and I liked the way they went. As far as the acting goes, I thought really everybody brought their A game. I wasn't as in love with Michael Shannon's Zod as I would have hoped to have been. I liked him. It's just, it's hard to follow Terrence Stamp's Zod.
I agree with that.
That, you know, kneel before Zod, that imperial tone, that is so hard to follow up. And Michael Shannon, he did a good job. It wasn't great, but everyone else, fan-fucking-tastic. Russell Crowe especially was phenomenal. But Henry Cavill, Kevin Costner, I loved them. I love them all. And for me, this is the best physical representation of Superman I have ever seen on a screen, big or small. Henry Cavill takes that role and really makes it his own. It's so different from Christopher Reeves. It's hard to compare them, and I'm not going to. But I thought he was an amazing physical specimen, but his acting was also perfect for the role.
And I would tell you one, speaking to that, I've had so many people ask me, is he better than Reeves? Is he better than Reeves? It's not, like you're saying, it's not a fair comparison. You're talking a completely, completely differently written character. The 70s was. Polar opposite special. Everything's different except the performance. And if you go back and actually watch Christopher Reeves' actual performance, he was great. When Lois Lane's death, how he handled that, Henry Cavill doesn't come close to that, in my opinion. But it's written differently. It's a different kind of Superman. Cavill was great. I thought he did a great Superman. Michael Shannon is the one thing I just didn't like about the movie. I liked Amy Adams. I really loved Anchi Trouillet, whatever her name is. She was played the second in command to Zod.
Oh, mm-hmm. man. Yeah, she was brutal.
I could have watched the movie with her the whole way through because I didn't like Michael Shannon. There were moments where I thought he was fantastic, but most of the time I felt like he was reading off a cereal box. I just didn't. He was just.
The whole movie, he's screaming at somebody.
Yeah.
So there's not a whole lot of range there. I mean, if there had been maybe some scenes where he's calmly debating maybe his way to go about doing stuff versus Jor-El's, then yeah, maybe a little bit more of a appreciation for him. I don't know. I kind of liked him, but I'm a little bit biased. I am a Michael Shannon fan, so.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Now, isn't it Henry Cavill, not Cavill?
Is it? You're asking the wrong Diablo, Chief. Really?
It's true. I loved his performance. A lot of people.
Let's call him. Me and Justin will call him Cavill. You call him Cavill. Right. One of us will be right.
I liked Henry Cavill as Superman quite a bit. A lot of people are complaining that they missed the bumbling Clark Kent deal, but he's not Clark Kent yet.
Yeah, you know? I agree with that. I think he's
not the reporter hiding a true identity, Clark right. Kent.
Right.
No, he's pretty much given his address away in this one.
I liked Amy Adams, but I didn't love her, and I don't know exactly why. She seemed almost too sweet for Lois Lane. I always picture Lois Lane being, she was tough, but I picture her having a little bit more attitude. I don't know. Maybe I didn't read the comics, and I haven't seen the movies nearly as much as you guys.
She was actually pretty spot on.
Yeah?
For what I remember of Lois.
I mean, it didn't detract from the enjoyment of the movie for me at all. It's just I don't know. It just. And I can't sit there and say who I think I would want there instead. She did fine. There's just something that I can't quite put my finger on. But
even hard-assed Amy Adams is still kind of cute and sweet.
Right. She is.
Yeah.
I didn't think they had any chemistry though. I really didn't. I tried and tried and tried. And the fact that they've had 10 minutes of total conversation, and then at one point she's just running up to him like she just had his baby. It's like,
well, we have no idea really how much time did they spend together. In certain locations having conversation. Granted, we didn't get to see much of it on the screen, but who knows maybe how long that would have gone on.
It just didn't
in
work
deleted scenes or something.
Their chemistry just didn't work for me. But they don't have a lot of it. It's not really about those two, thankfully, yet.
I hate to say that he replaces Christopher Reeve. I just almost think that's sacrilege.
It's way too soon.
I agree with that argument that it is too soon. I mean, you come out of this fantastic movie. Just love just almost everything about it. But because of that emotion of coming out of that, I don't want to pass judgment yet that he's the benchmark for Superman. Aaron makes some really good points about, you know, 30 years or so of separation between these two, and they're just completely different stories, different movies. It's just he's right up there with him though. I can see this, especially for younger people. This is easily probably their idea of Superman at this point.
Yeah,
this
James
is who
Bond
they will
effect.
Think of for years to come as being Superman. Mm-hmm. Some of us older farts, I don't know. It may be hard for us to pass up Christopher Reeve, but I thought he was phenomenal. Amy Adams, I could take her or leave her. I mean, it wouldn't have hurt my feelings if somebody else was cast. I thought she was good. Just, you know. Again, I could probably see half a dozen other people in here. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, and it wouldn't have really been any different for me. I don't think I would have had any less emotion. I think Kevin Costner was fantastic in the limited time he was in. One or two of the scenes that he was in really touched me emotionally, got me choked up a couple of times, and loved Russell Crowe. I thought it's good to kind of see him doing something interesting.
Something that makes sense for him.
Yeah, both those dads did really well. I would take either one of them.
Yep.
Let's move on to the production values on this film, whether we're talking about the direction that Zack Snyder brought to it, or, you know, did Superman look good flying? There was, and, you know, the production quality, the suit Superman wears. This is a very different suit than we've seen before. It styled quite a bit closer to the new 52 version of Superman than it does the old, you know, red trunks and blue tights. So what did you guys think of the look of this film and the direction? I think Zack Snyder, this is the least Zack Snyder-y film Zack Snyder's ever done. Mm-hmm. It was, for you guys, was that good, bad?
Well, I love Zack Snyder's direction that he normally does. I like that look, but I was glad that it wasn't in this movie. Mm-hmm. That kind of eerie, I don't know, like the backgrounds that are, you know, not natural colors, that kind of thing. And the flying, like you said, I don't know how to describe it. It just looked more, it looked so majestic or something than anything I've ever seen in a Superman movie. It just, you could almost feel the power oozing through him as he's
that
like.
That first moment when he actually takes flight for the first time, I was fist pumping.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. That was the best I've ever seen in a film. Thinking about it.
Yeah. Breaking those sound barriers and just creating those booms. That's some pretty cool
shit.
It
was awesome. The one thing that bugged the living crap out of me in this movie was the camera movement. There was so
the
many
wide, then zoom in. The wide, then zoom in.
No, not that. It was like it felt like the guy was just holding it instead of it being on. It's called a tripod. Seriously, yeah. Like, and it was to the point where it was
they rent them.
It was so distracting. I mean, it's just like a normal calm scene. In an action scene, maybe okay. If an action scene, I could imagine like the camera moving that kind of thing. But just in a normal dialogue-driven scene, and the camera's moving all over the place, it drove me insane. That is a huge thing for me.
I don't know why directors think that looks cool, because it does not. It's more distracting than
it almost. I feel like I'm having to move my eyes around to keep it steady in my head. I don't know. It just bothers me. So, did that bother any of you guys?
Maybe I'm not understanding exactly what you're talking about, but I don't think I noticed it as much as you do. Much like Justin's blindness to lens flares.
It's almost like I said, like the camera is not on a fixed surface.
It's all
like,
handheld.
Like a guy is holding it in his hand or on his shoulder.
I was more distracted by. Gotcha.
It's like watching somebody's home movies where you're going, "Oh, that's a beautiful sunset." Right. God, I wish it would fucking sit still.
Yeah, and I might have ruined it for you now, because next time you see it, you'll probably only see that.
No, I'll probably just sit there, text you in the middle of the movie, going, "Fuck you, Scott."
Pretty much.
I was more distracted by the wide shot and then zooms in. It was kind of like reminiscent, and Justin will understand the Firefly shots. Yeah, it was. Because he did it too much, where it's a wide shot and then it zooms into whatever he's trying to look at, and wide zooms in, it just got exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I kind of let it slide after a while. I thought it looked fantastic when Superman and Zod destroy like half of the Earth and they're pissing man. That's fantastic, and I'm not spoiling anything. Trust me, it's in every commercial you're going to see that they obviously have a fight on Earth. But I could have lived without all the blatant product placement.
IHOP?
Because they fight in IHOP like 8 times or something.
Right.
That was
eight skyscrapers fall around that one IHOP that's just sitting
there. Yeah, what's that?
That kind of stuff never bothers me.
Well, that's because you love
for
it.
For me, it helped. No, because for me, what it does is it helps build the realism of that world. This is a real place. It's got an IHOP. It's not like...
Sorry. You take the Avengers, for instance. When you sit there and you're watching the 5 or 6 superheroes banded together, back to back, in this, you know, all right, here's this massive showdown. Captain America's catching his shield. Thor's catching his hammer. And all you see is Farm Bureau life insurance behind them. Fuck that.
I agree, man.
It was lens flare, man.
No, I mean, IHOP, Sears. I mean, it's almost like they should have just stopped and done it like a commercial real quick. By the way, I'm Superman, and I endorse this location. But that's
like the IHOP, because it kind of played into that character of Pete.
Oh, it did not. They threw it in there for product placement. They got a check for that. But that said, when you actually see Superman and Zod having a fight, that is the closest I've ever been to seeing what a God-on-God, real-life Superman fight would be.
Exactly.
So, fuck it. I can live with IHOP.
That's how I imagine.
Even though they fight in IHOP a lot.
Everybody loves pancakes, man.
That's true. Pancakes are fun.
They got good crepes.
You know, one thing, and Justin, I know you're big on soundtracks and stuff. I think the soundtrack was good, but it didn't have that resonating melody or theme that the original did, or that like even like the Star Trek reboot had.
I liked it. I didn't love it.
Yeah.
A lot of people lately are bemoaning that movies these days really don't seem to have strong themes. I like the score. It's kind of nice for me that there isn't this overwhelming theme that constantly hits at those right moments. Now, did you guys like the costume?
I had no problem with it. I actually prefer the underwear inside the pants. But
I thought it was fine. Yeah. I
from, prominent. Well, I heard some people grumbling that it went a little too far afield. Now, this cape for most of the film was CGI'd. I never would have known that if somebody hadn't told me. But when I saw it the second time, I'm like, oh, yeah, those flutters are way too perfect for that to be anything but computer generated. So that thing looks too great. I love the special effects. I love the heat vision effect, that it's not just some pencil thin red beam shooting out of their eyes.
Yeah, but you that see, they actually like, veins almost, and stuff around
It's almost an evil kind of a look where their eye starts glowing hot red. The veins show up. That looked really great. But I think for me, the most interesting visual effects moment of the movie is when Jor-El is talking to Clark. And there's this whole diorama kind of going on around them as it illustrates what Jor-El's saying. And it's so Art Deco and so good looking. I spent the entire time he's talking just looking for the little details and elements in it. It looked real. It looked perfect. I thought it was fantastic. And Zack Snyder, I think, did an amazing job. I think it quiets a lot of his detractors. So
I still have issues with Snyder. It didn't end them for me, but he did better than I thought he was going to do.
All that said, let's give our final verdicts on this film. $1 out of $10, guys, what is it that you would pay to go and see this movie, Aaron?
Issues aside, I like the reboot. Look forward to part two with a better villain. 8 out of 10.
Brian?
Oh, man. I love just about everything about this movie. I'm giving it a solid 9. Strong 9.
Cool. Scotty?
It surpassed my expectations and entertained me from start to finish, despite some mild distractions. I gave it an 850.
Yeah, it was my most anticipated movie of the year. My fears of what this could have fallen into were not realized. It's an amazingly fun, and it felt fresh. And it's amazing to me that Superman can actually be made to feel fresh. So I'm giving this one a solid 9. I cannot recommend this movie enough.
All right. And we will talk about the ending that seems to have the internet a flurry after the show. So stick around for that. Okay, now let's go to This is the End. I saw This is the End. I'm the only one that saw it. The plot is pretty simple. The actors Seth Rogen and Jay Baruchel head over to James Franco's house for a party. And apparently once the apocalypse starts, they are trapped inside with other actors like Jonah Hill, Craig Robinson, and Danny McBride. They have to learn to get past all of their egos and survive because they're basically playing exaggerated versions of themselves. And they are the most selfish people left on the planet, so it goes about as well as you could think. The entire movie is really there for the actors to mock each other, or at least what they feel that the public thinks about them. So, you know, like Seth Rogen is considered a sellout. Jay is the guy who will never get famous. Franco is this goofy, arrogant ass kisser. And Danny McBride is a crude dick. That's pretty much what they play. Personally, this is one I was so excited to see. I was looking forward to seeing it all summer. The best jokes are in the trailer, I thought. It's getting great reviews. I don't know why. I thought it was kind of bland. All the jokes that aren't in the trailer seem to be playing off the jokes that are in the trailer. It just seems like it's trying way too hard. When a joke does work, it's absolutely hilarious. But when it doesn't, more often than not, it just falls flat. For me, the movie was about 20 to 30 minutes way too long. And it was only an hour and 45 minutes long. And I thought they could have cut 20 minutes to a half an hour out of that movie. Easy. I was getting sleepy and almost nodded off. And comedy should never, ever be boring. In terms of the acting, Franco's hilarious. Robinson's hilarious. Emma Watson is even better than the trailer alluded to.
Really?
I loved her, man. She was great. And I'm going to go on record and say that outside of Kenny Powers, Danny McBride is not funny. He's just not funny. He does the exact same sense of humor for every single thing that he does. Nothing changes. Every joke you see coming a mile away. And everybody in this movie is playing like an exaggerated version of themselves, except for he's playing another one of his characters, like the same guy. So, didn't like him. He just gets so exhausting. Every joke just goes on way too long. Seth, Jonah, and Jay, who I normally like, just aren't that good. Most of the time, I was spent laughing over Franco and Robinson. They really kind of carried the movie. So, but thankfully, the ending was absolutely perfect. There's a surprise cameo that made up for just about everything. I just felt bad for my daughter because it was her birthday movie. She always wanted to go see, and she was kind of bored with it.
It's a bummer.
Yeah, it is too bad. So overall, too long. Not everything works, but when it does work, it works great. So if $10 is the full price of admission, I'd pay $5.50. Hmm. All right, and Brian saw VHS 2. And before you review it, Andrew wrote in to say, what's up? Just watched VHS 2, and you guys definitely need to check it out. It's so much better than the first one in every way, and it's so much more fun. That's all, Andrew. All right, Brian. Oh, now tell us what you think. Go ahead. Piss the listener off.
Oh, man. I'll be nice this one time, but I just basically respectfully disagree with our listener, because this movie is just total crap. The stories, they did shrink the number of stories. I think there was 5 or 6 in the first one. There's only about 3 or 4 in this one. Every single one of them, with the exception of, I think, the last one, has some form of zombie in it. Even the umbrella, kind of the what I call the umbrella story, the story that ties all these vignettes together. Mm-hmm. There's no urgency. There's no suspense. Everything's predictable. The acting's not very good. I almost wanted to write iTunes and ask for my money back.
Wow. That bad?
It's okay. I'm on record as not really liking the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do, you know, to my credit, I did give props to a couple of the stories because they were entertaining and kind of surprising, nice twist, that kind of stuff. There's, for me personally, there was no redeeming features about this movie at all.
Wow.
So, it's just very, it feels very lazy, feels very.
Sounds like an Aaron review.
Feels very, it just, I mean, by all means, anybody that's seen this movie, I would love to hear your feedback on it, just because maybe you caught something that I didn't, but I will not watch another one of these movies. I can promise you that.
So what do you give it?
I give it a 2.
Ooh, snail. Hear that, Andrew? You want to dispute? Feel free to write in, because I don't know what to say. I still want to kind of see it, but now I'm leery.
That was why, you know, I mean, I wanted to see a follow-up, because I was actually kind of excited about this, because
it had potential based on the last one.
It's just like, I mean, but it's just, it's one of those things. Every good scene from this movie is in that Red Band trailer. And unfortunately, they ruin every single story. Hmm. Every one of them.
Gotcha.
You know what's coming.
Gotcha.
There are some graphic stuff, though.
All right. Well, we'll check it out, and apparently we might have lost Andrew as a listener. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Sorry. He ain't the first.
Yeah. Let's go to box office real quick. Man of Steel actually had the biggest Father's Day weekend ever, the best June opening ever, and the best weekend for a first DC film. So apparently Scott and Justin split a win, because I don't know how you call that one, because it was $116 million total when it was all said and done. Scott guessed 100, Justin guessed 120, something like that.
120.
So I don't know who the over-under was.
It was 128, so I win.
He was in the middle. I think you're both right. Especially
since fuck him, I win.
First you said a dollar. Dollar Bob.
Yeah, you did. You shot way low, man.
Yeah.
That was your first call. So I don't know. But I do know that Brian and myself were both wrong. So we'll just go
with that. I was way closer than you, because that's what started the whole bit anyway.
I said 80 million. You said 150 million. Yep. I'm no mathematician, but I'm pretty sure that means I was closer.
I'm pretty sure that 128 million that it did.
No, 116 million was the weekend, 128 million total since it opened. It opened on Thursday. It does not count.
It does count.
Really? Because it says weekend gross.
Thursday night on, that counts as the weekend. So anyway, 128 million.
So when the studio says it doesn't count, they're wrong? That's what you're telling me? The studio's wrong?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Shut up. All right, this is the end open to $20.7 million, which actually wasn't too bad. $33 million, it's already made its budget back, so it's going to make money. Now You See Me, still holding strong. $11 million, it's already made $80 million. It's going to be a $100 million movie. Surprise it of the summer. Fast and Furious 6, $9.5 million, $219 million, the biggest movie in the franchise, officially. Worldwide and here. The Purge, $8.3 million. It dropped 75%, one of the biggest dips ever. So,
well, it had a huge opening. That
for
they $51
million
right?
total. It had a huge opening, but still, that's a huge drop no matter where it opened. So, and also, Iron Man.
The title kind of had it coming.
Touche. Got it. Yeah, I got it. You didn't have to explain it. Iron Man 3 finally crossed $400 million in the U.S. So congratulations to Robert Downey Jr., who is still cashing checks.
All right, guys, we have got three films we're going to be talking about opening up on June 28th. The first one, Byzantium, is a fantastical thriller directed by Neil the Crying Game Jordan and starring Gemma Arterton and Saoirse Ronan. Two mysterious women seek refuge in a rundown coastal resort. Clara meets lonely Noel, who provides shelter in his deserted guest house called Byzantium. Schoolgirl Eleanor befriends Frank and tells him their lethal secret. They were born 200 years ago and survive on human blood. As knowledge of their secret spreads, their past catches up on them with deathly consequence. At this point, just the name Gemma Arterton is enough to get me in the theater. Does that hold true for you as well, Brian? Are you in the mood for a little art house fang bang action?
Fang bang. Wow.
I tell you, I love Gemma Arterton like the rest of you guys, but I'm just not in the mood for another vampire movie.
Have you watched the trailer?
Yeah.
I think it looks really interesting.
Okay. It does it to me.
Oh.
Next question.
I don't know.
Sensitive.
You know how everybody's talking about getting fatigued or tired of zombie movies?
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way about vampires. I know a lot of that's probably burned from the Twilight movies, which I didn't like a whole lot, but I didn't see anything new in this trailer that makes me really want to see it. And I do think Gemma Arterton is cute, but
I wouldn't see anything just based on someone's being attractive. I like her as an actress too. I think the premise is very interesting. I definitely want to see it. I don't know if I'll go to a theater though.
I tell you what, why don't you interview with a vampire?
Oh, because I hate that movie.
Really?
He also directed that.
Yeah, I know he did. And that's I didn't like it.
Oh,
I thought Tom Cruise's Lestat was not good. Personal opinion.
Next up, The Heat. This is an action comedy directed by the man who brought us Bridesmaid, Paul Feig, and stars Melissa McCarthy and Sandra Bullock. Uptight FBI special agent Sarah Ashburn is paired with testy Boston cop Shannon Mullins in order to take down a ruthless drug lord. The hitch? Neither woman has ever had a partner, or a friend for that matter. Sweet Sandra has pretty much been cornering the market on playing uglified FBI agents. If they find a way to somehow look past her hideousness to the real beauty underneath, I think we're going to have to make a drinking game out of her IMDb page. Scotty, you ready to feel the heat from Melissa McCarthy's undercarriage?
Oh, you got it. I was going to pull that joke, but you stole it from me. I'm actually probably going to see this one in the theater, but more because my wife is obsessed with both Melissa McCarthy and Sandra Bullock. So
she's obsessed with Sandra Bullock?
Oh, she loves Sandra Bullock.
Still?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, what was the football movie she did a couple years ago?
Blindside. Blindside?
Wildcats.
Wildcats. Scott doesn't even know what that
Speed?
Is. No. It's before you were born, Chief. I think.
Well,
I
most Speed, of the stuff we talk Chief, about she is. Did have a jacket that had Wildcats on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, see, so, that's where I was going.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure he knew that going in, but that's cool.
Okay, but here's the thing. Is you told me the Red Band trailer made this movie look a lot funnier than the regular.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like the same trailer, just with all the vulgarity in it.
I think the vulgarity is what sells it, man. It made it so much more amusing to me.
Nah. That was, I mean, there was maybe one or two things in it that weren't in the regular trailer, but everything else just seemed, they just edited out all the swearing from the
from I the think Melissa McCarthy is fucking hysterical.
I do too.
She's one of those, even Identity Thief, when they focused on her, she's hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? This is 40, which I didn't think was great. It had a lot of great scenes, but her scene, the funniest one in the whole movie.
Yeah, it was good.
She's just... And Hangover 3, which I didn't like. I liked her in Hangover 3. She's just funny in whatever she does. I think she's a very funny woman. I don't really like Sandra Bullock, but when I saw I didn't like the original trailer. Thought it was generic and bland. And then I saw the Red Band, and I loved it.
So if you have a crappy
like
movie
F-words.
And you just put F-words in, you're gonna be
pretty
all
much,
about it?
Pretty much. Unless it's called This
but
Is
I
The
can't,
End.
But I can't
work.
Like a movie because the cute girl's in it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can like a movie because it's got swearing in it. Okay.
Yeah,
that makes
exactly.
Sense. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. Now gotcha. You're catching up. I want to see it.
Well, let's go on to the last one, White House Down. Now, this is an action film directed by Roland Emmerich, starring Channing Tatum, Jamie Foxx, and Maggie... Oh, she's so beautiful. Gyllenhaal. Sony bought the script written by James Vanderbilt for $3 million, and The Hollywood Reporter said it was tonally and thematically similar to Die Hard and Air Force One. I'd say to file that one in the no shit cabinet. Capitol Police John Cale has just been denied his dream job with the Secret Service to protect President James Sawyer. Wasn't that the name of the character in Lost?
Lost, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so. Hmm. Not wanting
two Lost references in one episode.
Wow. With the news, he takes her on a tour of the White House when the complex is overtaken by a heavily armed paramilitary group. Now, with the nation's government falling into chaos and time running out, it's up to Cale to save the president, his daughter, and the country. The trailers proudly declare Emmerich as the director of such cinematic brilliance as The Day After Tomorrow in 2012. Two films I don't think are as big a draw as Columbia Pictures seems to think. Am I wrong, Aaron, or is Channing Tatum virtually bulletproof at this point?
I will see anything with Channing Tatum at this point.
Yeah, too.
I wish I could say otherwise. He makes this look like it's not going to be a Die Hard ripoff, and it's not going to be similar in tone to Olympus Has Fallen. It seems like it's just going to be almost like a buddy cop flick. Like him and the president are going to be throwing around quips and shooting bitches by the end of the movie, and I think it looks fun.
I'm on board, too. I'm surprised that you're hating on it so much.
When did I hate on it?
No, not you. Justin.
Wait. You ain't heard mine yet.
Oh, all right.
Ryan too, really? Oh, man.
I honestly do not want to see this. I love Channing Tatum. I think for the most part, he is bulletproof. I think this movie, money-wise, will be a hit. But I don't want to see... Well, it looks like it should be Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker.
I would like that, asshole.
Yeah, that was good for, what, two or three movies, but... I'm sorry. This just does not. I don't need a goofy, wisecracking president who, I dropped the RPG. What do you mean you dropped? I dropped the RPG. I'm sorry. Whatever it is.
Apparently, real demanding of your commander in chief. Is that what you're saying? You want him to be respectable and.
I'm sorry. Well, I want him to have a little bit
more.
Get
off my Jordans.
I want him to have a little bit more. I don't know. From the theme that I got, I kind of got the same thing. I got a buddy cop movie, and he's the wisecracking, funny guy. I don't want that from a president. It doesn't feel like, I don't know. To me, it just doesn't feel like he's in that kind of danger or whatever, even though everything's blowing up around him everywhere he steps. But
I'm sorry.
This looks like shit. I had high hopes for this early in the year, but it looks like shit.
Jesus Christ, are you and Aaron in a negative off? I mean, who can be the most hateful?
He's winning.
I'm trying to win it.
Dude, this is Kung Fu, and Aaron's is strong. You are in for a world of hurt, my friend. All right, folks, of these three films, Byzantium, The Heat,
No. What do you think? You didn't even say anything. What do you think about White House Down?
I haven't really said shit about any of them.
You don't care about it?
No, I mean, I was kind of keeping my opinion a little more to myself, but, you know, I have been known to take the spotlight too much. I thought I would make sure you guys got plenty of it.
Does that mean you don't really want to talk about it?
No, that means he's dying to talk about it.
Well, since you're making me. No, I think White House Down looks fun as a rental. I think The Heat, it looks like it's continuing kind of diminishing returns on Melissa McCarthy. Byzantium, though, I think looks incredibly interesting, and I'm much more curious to see what sort of film that is than the other two. So I think you've got my pick for the three, but of these three, which ones are you guys most interested in seeing? Byzantium, The Heat, White House Down, June 28th, which one is going to have your ass in a theater seat? Aaron?
The Heat.
Scotty?
White House Down.
Brian?
I will actually go with Byzantium.
The one you don't want to see?
Yep. I just basically because I can tell you what's going to happen with The Heat. I can tell you what's going to happen with White House Down. Not exactly sure what's going to happen with Byzantium. It is a somewhat semi-original plot, it appears. So
both of you are really going to be seeing Man of Steel again. That's what you're saying.
Pretty much, yeah.
I've already seen it twice. I will probably see it a third time. But Byzantium looks interesting. The other two, yeah, I've seen that, been there, done it.
Fair enough. Well, you can always listen and subscribe on iTunes, your Stitcher Radio app, or through our RSS feed at thehollywoodoutsider.com. There's a new episode every Thursday.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie, and if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, tweet us or Facebook us the answer, and next week we'll give you a proper whole shout-out. Last week's answer was Brian's pick, and it was 50 First Dates. And the people that got it correct, Sue S., Michael Brudnell, he wanted us to use his full name, so bam, there you go. Jesse M., Greg S., John B., who, by the way, Scott tweeted he was happy he could help you out last week. D.A. Chaney and Tammy. So thanks, guys. Congratulations. This week it's my turn, so if you think you know what this clip is, hit us up. Here's your clip.
No soldier has ever died needlessly under my command, Mr. Irwin. See, I too share the burden of command. You may not think that I've ever set foot on a battlefield, but that's because you have never sat behind this desk. This desk. My men and I are vastly outnumbered. We spend every day behind enemy lines. Because make no mistake about it, Mr. Irwin, they are the enemy. But I don't need to justify myself to you, do I?
I don't know. Do you?
Real quick, TV news. There's not much going on TV. I mean, it's summer. There's not a lot in the summer. But they are getting serious about original content over at Netflix because they just signed a deal with DreamWorks, who make the Shrek films as well as the upcoming Turbo movie, for 300 hours of original animation based on their properties. So we keep talking about it. TV is changing.
Well, and you know, the two shows so far that Netflix has put out, House of Cards and
Hemlock Grove.
Yeah, both of these are the type of shows that you would anticipate that a cable network would show. And so it kind of follows that Netflix would do the same. But they're also trying to bring in, you know, some family element to it as well. And they did strike a deal with DreamWorks Animation for 300 hours of programming exclusively for Netflix. That is a fuck ton.
That's nuts.
I believe it's literally a fuck ton.
How do you measure
of
that?
Content.
I looked it up on Wikipedia. You're exactly right. That is the minimum requirement for a fuck ton is 300 hours.
Okay, I thought so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is going to be content that is inspired by the characters that DreamWorks Animation has created for their film. So you can anticipate Turbo is going to be the first one that they're going to be doing, but I'm pretty sure you'll be seeing a Shrek show at some point. But what's interesting is that they also, Classic Media is a company that had a library of cartoons, and DreamWorks purchased them last year for $155 million. Some of the cartoons included in that they can redo, Archie, Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Oh, wow.
Rocky and Bullwinkle, He-Man, Dick Tracy. If you're a Christian, the VeggieTales, there are a lot of cartoons that this company owned that now DreamWorks owns and that they can do with as they will. So who knows? We may get another He-Man at some point, but there's a lot of material there. And it's interesting that Netflix is trying to get that family market. I think it's a smart move on their part. Kids need cartoons, damn it.
I didn't realize Netflix is huge in the family market. I guess people that have kids watch that all the time.
Well, yeah. They don't have to
Have you seen our friends list on Xbox?
They're all watching Netflix, yeah.
Yeah, anybody with a kid on our list says watching Netflix, and it's usually SpongeBob or whatever, some kids stuff. So,
yeah. Or they could just be a little creepy. Whatever.
I don't know if it does it on yours, but on mine, whenever you log in, it says, do you want Netflix or do you want kids Netflix? Like, there's a whole like separate side of it now.
Oh, I could see why it would come up for you all the time because you're kind of a big kid.
I could see why it wouldn't come up for you because...
Touche.
Because it automatically comes up for kid stuff.
As he calls it, bait. But some other news came out just recently, and I wanted to make sure that I brought it up. AMC, the people who have been bringing us Mad Men and The Walking Dead, well, they've got a new show that they're going to be working on called Line of Sight. It's created by a guy who works over at Showtime. A guy named Blake Masters Really? That's your name?
That's a pretty
your
kick-ass name.
Your parents called you Blake? What the fuck? With that kind of name, you should either be a gunslinger or maybe a vampire killer. But Blake Masters, he created a show over on Showtime called Brotherhood, but he's coming out with a new one called Line of Sight. And Jonathan Demme of, you know, Silence of the Lambs fame is going to be directing it. It's a sci-fi show. Apparently, it's going to be set in a world with characters that defy the traditional boundaries of drama and sci-fi. It's going to be about a National Transportation Safety Board investigator who survives a mysterious plane crash, bringing him on a quest to discover the accident's true cause. So maybe a little X-Files, maybe a little Fringe, maybe a little Millennium. Do you guys remember that movie?
Yeah, I do.
So who knows where it's going to go, but it's, you know, they got a serious director coming on board with it. It's AMC, and they've done nothing but high-quality shows. I am excited to see what this one's all about.
That sounds very cool. And granted, it's pilot stage, so I don't know if it's in series stage, but we'll see what happens. Hopefully it gets picked up, and we'll see more from Blake Masters.
Blake Masters. Yeah.
Let's go to DVD and Blu-ray, Scotty.
All right, we are looking for the releases of June 25th. The first one is The Call, when a veteran 911 operator takes a life-altering call from a teenage girl who has just been abducted. She realizes that she must confront a killer from her past in order to save the girl's life. It stars Halle Berry and Abigail Breslin. Aaron reviewed this on episode 85 and gave it a 650.
I liked it. That was fun.
Yeah, my wife has already told me that we are buying that movie. She liked that.
I don't know if I'd buy it, but hey, teach their own. It was better than I thought it would be.
She loved it, so... Incredible Burt Wonderstone. Steve Carell and Steve Buscemi star in this comedy as two friends who grew up to be Vegas magicians, only to be challenged by the fresher Jim Carrey. I reviewed that one on episode 84, and I gave it a 4 out of 10. That was kind of a disappointment. Mm. Next up is Phantom. The haunted captain of a Soviet submarine holds the fate of the world in his hands. Forced to leave his family behind, he is charged with leading a covert mission cloaked in mystery. That one has Ed Harris and David Duchovny and...
It looks horrible.
It looks kind of bad.
It looks so bad.
The one that I think looks really interesting is Upside Down. It's got Jim Sturgis and Kirsten Dunst. That's the one where they live on two planets that are very close to each other on gravitational field. It looks really interesting. I kind of want to see where it goes. I'm actually going to check that one out. And lastly, I've got Pusher. In London, a street dealer's wife spins...
Push it.
Push it real good. Didn't we get chastised for our rapping? Come on. In London, a street dealer's life spins out of control over the course of 1 week after he borrows money from his supplier on what was supposed to be a sure thing. That sounds like a totally...
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie before.
Also, Ashley Stewart...
That's fine.
Ashley Stewart wrote us and told us to check out a movie called Margin Call. It's available on Netflix Instant, and she said to ask yourself... With a cast this awesome, how have I never heard of this movie? I've actually already added it to my queue, and I'm going to be checking it out this week. So thanks for that recommendation.
Well, what's the cast?
It's got Zachary Quinto, Stanley Tucci, Kevin Spacey, Paul Bettany. Yeah, she's right.
Yeah, it's a pretty good cast.
Sounds pretty good.
Thanks, Aaron.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Oh, Scott's going to explode any second now.
I can hear the tears.
With that, we'll move on to our recast in the classics segment. Will you fuckers stop laughing and let me do the damn thing?
I guess I'm not even going to address it. They're just powering forward.
With that, we'll move on to our recast in the classics segment. Justin, can you give us another quick rundown of this one?
Sure. Recasting the classics is where one of us hoes hands to another one a classic film and asks them to recast four of its leading characters. They can cast it with actors similar to the originals, then go far afield. They just need to be able to explain their choices. Last time we did this, Aaron handed off to Scott Caddyshack. He asked Scotty to recast Ty Webb, played by Chevy Chase, Al Zervic, played by Rodney Dangerfield, Judge Smales, played by Ted Knight, and Carl Spackler, of course, played by Bill Murray. So, Scotty, take it over. Recast Caddyshack.
You better impress me. Don't get this one wrong.
Oh, you're not going to like my choices. You're
well, that sounds like good it. So far.
Yeah. This is the most difficult one I've done yet. I've only done like five or six, but this was really hard because Caddyshack is I don't even like golf, and that movie's a classic. It's just so funny. Ty Webb... Originally played by Chevy Chase, Neil Patrick Harris.
Ah, all right. I'll give you that one. Not quite. It's different kind of comedy, but I'll give you that.
I'm a fan of him anyway. I've talked about it a lot, but he just seems like he's got that confidence in. Because Chevy Chase was kind of a dick.
Not kind of. I loved him, so he was definitely a dick.
You love dick. Neil Patrick Harris could definitely pull that off.
I didn't see that coming.
That's what he said.
Can I get through one segment tonight where you guys just don't?
Oh, no, these are too good, man.
Just keep going, man.
Next up, how did you decide to pronounce that? Al Cervic?
Cervic? Not cervix. Cervic.
Cervic?
Cervic.
Alec Baldwin.
All right. He could be funny. He could be funny. Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
I try to think of like short, stouter guys.
He's kind of taller, but he is he's obnoxious enough to maybe pull it off.
Yeah.
I'll definitely arrogant enough. So, yeah.
Yeah. Judge Smales. Mm-hmm. Try to think of an older guy with all white hair that is funny. Steve Martin.
Steve Martin?
Steve Martin could be a jerk.
Sorry.
Keep going.
And after your comments earlier, I'm kind of regretting my choice for Carl Spackler, but I think Danny McBride could pull it off.
Fuck that. Your movie just, I won't go see it now.
3 out of 4 ain't bad.
Oh my God, that's actually a good call.
How the fuck is that a good call?
Because I fucking love Danny McBride.
You're wrong.
He could do the same fucking thing at every movie, and I'm still going to laugh my balls off. That's fantastic.
I'm in the middle of it. Part of me wants to go, but the other half, I can see that. So I give you kind of a solid B there, Scott. Good job.
I'll give you the first three. The last one isn't, I just don't like Danny McBride. Unless he's Kenny Powers. I like Kenny Powers, but.
I think he's funny. Did you see.
Everything he's done is the same, so you can pick any movie. Seriously, every movie is the exact same. He doesn't do anything different.
Because it's always funny.
No, it's not. Absolutely not.
Because it's always
funny.
If it ain't
broke, don't fix it.
Absolutely not. It's always broken. Funny.
What's one with Sean, the guy from American Pie? And
Sean William Scott.
Sean William Scott, and what was the one. With him and the other guy that were...
I feel like I'm at Blockbuster. You got that movie with that guy?
No.
Oh, no, you said about 30 Minutes or Less.
No.
I like 30 Minutes or Less. He was good in that one because he was very, very small.
He was good in Tropic Thunder.
And it's my week to pass it off to Brian. So, Brian, you're going to recast The Breakfast Club.
Oh, shit.
You're going to recast Andrew Clark, who was played by Emilio Estevez. You're going to recast John Bender, who was played by Judd Nelson. You're going to recast Claire Standish, who was played by Molly Ringwald. And lastly, Allison Reynolds by Ally Sheedy.
Piece of cake.
You want to hear a shocker? People used to say I act like John Bender.
I'm waiting for the shock to...
That's what I'm saying. Sure. Not very shocking, is it?
Because you're a bitch, girl. Sorry, Brian. I just stepped all over your joke.
All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic. This week, since Man of Steel has come out and we have watched Zod try global domination and we have talked about our favorite villains before, what about the worst? What villains, any type of film, were just absolutely awful and honestly either made you laugh at their acting or the ridiculous plan to take over the planet? Justin, let her rip.
Well, I got four of them. The first one, Deacon Frost.
Well, cross that off my list.
I had two.
Hey, don't put me first, bro. I hated Deacon Frost. My wife loved him, but I think that had a lot more to do with her drooling over the guy playing him more than it had to do with the character. I thought he was a shitty actor, a shitty role. Couldn't stand him. Apparently, I'm not alone in my dislike of that villain.
Well, mine had a lot to do with his plan.
Yeah, I actually like the actor.
I like Stephen Dorff, but his plan was to turn the whole world into vampires. What the fuck are you going to eat?
Food.
What are you going to eat? There's nothing left. You're going to eat your own kind, apparently.
Yeah, not exactly thinking ahead.
Mm-mm.
The next one, pretty much the entire cast of villains from Batman and Robin. Poison Ivy sucked. Mr. Freeze sucked. They all sucked. I don't know what happened. I mean, Joel Schumacher is really what happened to that franchise. Mm-hmm. But I think every villain in that movie, and really even in Batman Forever, pretty much all sucked.
What's the forecast? There's a freeze in the air tonight.
Let's kick some ice.
Why did he sound more Transylvanian when you do it?
I don't know. Every accent I have is Transylvanian.
Pretty much. You know, we talked about the Man of Steel earlier. There is a Superman villain that I fucking can't stand. If you're going to go ahead and head on over to Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, you've got...
Nuclear Man.
Nuclear Man.
So bad.
Here's how he's created. After John Cryer, the young Lenny Luthor, breaks his uncle out, Lex Luthor, out of prison... They steal a strand of Superman's hair from a museum, and then they create a genetic matrix, whatever the fuck that is. And Lex attaches that with the hair to a nuclear missile that Superman intercepts and throws into the sun, after which a glowing ball of energy is discharged from the sun and develops into a superhuman, the Nuclear Man.
Wow.
Fucking awful.
You want to hear a funny aside to that?
I
saw a Gene Hackman interview a long time ago where he was talking about why he didn't do Superman 3, and he said he bowed out because he didn't like Richard Lester, who was the director. And they asked him, why'd you do Superman 4? He said, A, I didn't really read the script. B, I needed the money at that time, because apparently that was the time when he was doing every movie. And three, I didn't read the script. I just thought it was a great interview because he said Nuclear Man was one of the worst things he's ever seen once he actually read it.
Nuclear Man.
Awful. And he sees Lex Luthor as his father, and he, as powerful as he is, he will be powerless if no sunlight is touching him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, kind of an Achilles heel going on there. Fucking turd.
Bring an umbrella. You kick his ass.
Yeah, no shit. It's a cloudy day. Oh, fuck. All right. And last but certainly not least, God in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Oh, that was bad.
So apparently at the center of the Milky Way galaxy is God, and God needs a spaceship. It's dumb. That whole fucking movie is stupid, and it pretty much ruined Shatner for me because it was his story and he directed it, and it is even as crappy as some of the next gen films were. It is by far the shittiest Star Trek film ever made.
Why would Morgan Freeman need a spaceship? That's what I want.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, God, you think that should make for a pretty good villain? He don't.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. Brian, what you got, man?
Oh, man. Kind of staying with the comic book stuff here. Pretty much all of these deal with comic book movies. I got about four of them in no particular order. First one here is from the first X-Men movie, Sabretooth.
Mm.
I mean, what a puss. I mean, the guy is just or a pussy cat. Row.
Row.
Can you imagine Brian saying that in the bedroom?
Mm-hmm. With his drawl.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Somebody in Texas just went.
Oh, man. Anyway, he just, you know, Sabretooth has got an outright hatred for Wolverine. And I think they touched on that in the ever-loved Wolverine, you know, X-Men Origins movie. But... Mm-hmm. The first X-Men movie, he was just very poorly handled, and I don't even know if he even had a line in the movie. He just growled and stuff.
He was bad. He was bad.
Very bad. Another one, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, Galactus.
God.
It's a cloud.
It was a dangerous cloud. Him and Nuclear Man could have joined up. That's how they could have fought with weather instruments.
I was so looking forward to Galactus, and then we just get shit on.
I know. I mean, I'm fine with a giant guy, and he doesn't have the horned helmet-looking thing. Okay, I got change it up somewhat. Make him – I don't care. But
a little
just
less
to make
purple.
This, right. Just, but, good Lord, that was horrible. Venom, I mentioned him earlier.
Yeah.
Topher Grace, I'm sorry. I don't care how jacked up he was. This was a really, Venom's just a super badass bad guy. And I don't care how good of an actor Topher Grace is, which he's really not. He's just not that guy. He's just not Venom.
I see what you're saying. He didn't fit.
No. Honorable mention. This is going to probably piss off a couple of people. Bane.
Well, explain.
Batman and Robin Bane? Sean Connery doing a voiceover.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You know, I just never, and I guess because maybe that was a little bit of a distraction, it just never really, I could never just latch onto him being this vicious bad guy. So, he's not the worst one. It's just more like a disappointment. Right.
I see what you're saying, because it's unlike the Joker. You know, when the Joker was in a scene, you were riveted. Whereas Bane was there, I mean, he kind of filled the space.
Yeah.
Right.
I see what you're saying.
So,
I liked him, but I get you.
I'm sorry, Aaron.
Yeah, it's my turn.
What you got?
I've got a couple, like, bad acting, and then I've got a couple horrible schemes, which won't include Deacon Frost now, just so you know. the worst villain for me, and I'm sorry, Justin, you may want to mute your mic. The Architect in Matrix Reloaded, just thought, what a bloated and boring performance for a guy that's supposed to basically be God. I wanted to slap people next to me for how stupid the exposition was.
You've waited, 5 hours or 6 hours to get to him? And
yeah.
And you're like, that's it?
That's all you got, huh? Really? Yeah,
guy in a chair.
Yeah, guy in a chair. Okay, cool. Terrell from Battlefield Earth, I mean, that's an easy one. Worst dialogue for any villain in the history of villains.
Best.
I was conquering galaxies!
I don't care if he even paid for everything. Somebody should have fired him. I don't care. My absolute worst villain of all time, Richard Roxburgh as Dracula and Van Helsing. I've come to like the film, but everything I don't like about it is that one actor. His performance is just god-awful. He's horrendous, and he should be kicked out of the union, I think, just for doing that movie. That movie would have been 10 times better with a better actor, just playing Dracula. But I digress. Brian and Justin love that movie, so they're both being quiet. Alec in GoldenEye had one of the worst schemes of any Bond villain I can think of. Because
make currency they can't spend?
Yes. Sean Bean's genius plan was to hack into the Bank of England, steal all their money electronically, and then use the GoldenEye satellite to send a pulse through London, erasing all the financial data and records and putting the country into like this financial crisis or whatever, which means all the money he just stole is worthless. Mm-hmm. It's not worth shit. Okay, the last guy. Justin, you'll probably hate me for this one too. the reason why I don't like Superman Returns. Lex Luthor, who I thought was portrayed brilliantly by Kevin Spacey, and I actually think was better than Gene Hackman. He has this idiotic plan to create a giant kryptonite island in the ocean, raise all the sea levels up, so that it's the only place left to live, and then like charge a fortune to anybody that can afford to live there. But who the fuck is going to want to live on that giant ugly rock?
When you got no choice, when the pickings is slim, you take what you can get.
That thing is not going to sustain 1 ounce of life on it. All it is a giant rock. And this was even worse than Lex Luthor's plan in the original Superman movie, which was, to sink the West Coast, and I'm going to sell off the land that's on the edge of the West Coast that doesn't sink? Because people are going to want to fucking move there.
Call it Project Arizona Bay.
Project Arizona Bay. Those are mine. Scotty, what do you got?
Well, all of mine were not really poor performances, terrible just list. Ideas. But
because they're movies you like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Justin already took my Deacon Frost from Blade, although, like I said, I did like the performance. But outside of the concept of dropping metal sticks on the planet in G.I. Joe,
yeah,
which we talked about at length before, the other one that just bugged the crap out of me, as far as if you want to even call it a villain, was the villain of nature from The Happening.
The Happening, yeah.
Plants
attack.
Trees are mad!
Can we consider M. Night Shyamalan a villain to any moviegoer? Because I want to add him to my list.
The problem is that I really like The Sixth Sense. I really liked Unbreakable. I like Signs. And then it just kind of went downhill from there.
Say hello to your mother for me.
That's all I had.
Oh, just those?
Yeah.
Oh, Brian, I love you.
Oh, that is funny.
I think we actually got our own thing going on tonight. I don't know if y'all two know.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of our listeners on Facebook, Scott M., Lex Luthor and any of his schemes, every one of them has been a real estate scam. Dumb. Justin V. says Sean Connery and his weather machine from the Avengers. Good call.
Not the good Avengers, but the...
Yes,
the bad one with 86. Ray Fiennes and...
Was it Uma Thurman?
Uma Thurman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Stephen W. said the plants from The Happening, or as I like to call it, The Crappening.
The Crappening.
All right, let's go to... If you guys have anything that you want to send in, feel free to email us.
And who was it that had that one for The Happening?
Stephen W.
Stephen, I did not read your Facebook.
Nope, you didn't. I'm the only one that reads it before. I'm the only one that reads it ever, I think. I'm not sure.
I read it.
That's bullshit.
I'm just kidding. Remember, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider or Twitter at @H_Outsider. We'll mention you on next week's show. And Tammy had tweeted us asking, what about those people that liked us before? We're already drinking with y'all. These are people that are new to the party. Steve Reyes, Sean McDonald, John Butler, Rebecca, Jack Bergstrom, Podmonster, and Patriot Lemonade. Thanks,
Patriot
everybody.
Patriot Lemonade?
Yeah, I guess that means they like lemonade, and they're all about America.
Okay.
So, go you. Let's go to emails, Justin. You got the first one.
Do they wear, like, the Iron Patriot outfit just with some, like, lemon logo?
He might be changing it now.
That'd be kind of badass. First emails from Jess. He says, a random aside about World War Z, since he talked about it this week. My mom and her husband, regular moviegoers both, saw the trailer for World War Z a couple weeks ago for the first time and came out of it with no idea that it was a zombie movie. They thought it was an alien invasion movie or something. Neither of them knew it was based on a book and were coming into the trailer completely fresh. I wonder if this misunderstanding is prevalent and a major failure in marketing or just a random fluke. It's hard for me to know since I read the book when it first came out and also keep up with movie news and have been reading about this movie for over a year. You guys rock as always, Jess. I gotta agree. I mean, not once is the word zombie mentioned, and they move so fast and the camera's often so far away, you really can't tell what they are. So there may be a lot of people out there that don't realize that the Z stands for zombie.
I actually had somebody at work ask me, because, you know, of course, you're the movie guy, if it was an alien flick. So they're not alone. I think people that don't really follow movies probably don't have any idea or haven't read the book.
Maybe they could do up a new trailer where at least one person yells, zombies, look! Problem solved.
No, because then they have to go back and reshoot. And
throw,
be another,
throw it in ADR.
Oh, another, God, 60, yeah, then it 6 months. For another 6 months. Good call.
All right, Brian.
Oh, yeah, we got one from Sue. She says, things that are awesome. This is the end. Marin. Brian. I mean, I don't know if you heard the last one there. Brian.
Yeah, we got it.
We got it.
Just making sure.
We got it.
I would agree with her on that one.
Yeah.
Brian.
She's reaching.
All right. Thing that is not awesome, Man of Steel. So disappointed. Later, Sue S. I think she had a problem with basically kind of the, maybe like the villain casting. She has a couple of issues and stuff with it, but hey, everybody's got their opinions. So I don't really agree with hers either. So I'm just disagreeing
about you.
He's disagreeing.
You agree with her about you, but disagree about Superman. So I got you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So which side of her opinion is right? Which one? The Man of Steel or you?
I am the Man of Steel.
Nice. Nice, Brian. All right, Scott.
All right, we got a tweet from D.A. Cheney. She says, nice job, Scott, with a hashtag of fifth degree. And for those that are just tuning in, that is the fifth degree game we played last week where I was victorious.
And he's still enjoying that.
I am, because it doesn't...
Does he walk around with his chest out?
He does. He had a t-shirt made.
You were the hanging Chad of this podcast. I want to recount.
She says, I can tell I won't make the connections very fast in this new game. I was like, work, brain. Nice. Yeah, Dead Man in My Hallway and 51st Dates. I really enjoyed Adam Sandler's role in that movie quite a lot more than I expected to. Also, we got a tweet from Tammy. She says, how do I pronounce the name?
Ralph.
Brandon Ralph.
Okay.
Ralph.
I so agree about Brandon Ralph, like, should have been bigger.
With an R.
Well, I know how it looks. I didn't know. I knew I got yelled at for saying it wrong last week.
We didn't yell at you. We gave coercive conversation.
It was harsh.
Tammy production. Says, I so agree Brandon Routh should have been bigger. He can do comedy as well as serious.
That's what she said.
He was on a short-lived show, Partners. Dane Cook kills movies. He sucks the life out of a movie. I can't stand him. What happened to Jason Biggs? While I agree with you on his comedy movies, I want to ask, Tammy, have you seen Mr. Brooks? Because I really liked him in that. And I do kind of wonder what happened to Jason Biggs.
He's on Twitter, but I don't think he's acting.
My Best Friend's Girl, was that the last movie he did?
Oh, they've stopped making American Pie movies.
Oh, the American
that's
Pie.
That's kind of what happened.
Yeah.
I've given Stephen W. I've always thought, this is in relation to last week, I've always thought Jim Caviezel should have been bigger than he is. He's had some good roles, but none of them besides Passion of the Christ have been very big. He was great in Frequency, if nobody saw it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And if you've not seen Highwayman or The Prisoner, you should watch both of them. Great show last week, but I'm sorry. He means rapping, but he says the raping was terrible.
Hey, my raping is top notch.
My raping is fantastic. People love it when I rape.
I don't
I've
rape.
Got, look, lots of practice, and I've become very good at it.
Mm-hmm. I've been raping for years.
People pay me to come in and rape
them. I'm the only one on this podcast that hasn't been raping. I just want to go on record and say that.
Well, good for you, Buzzkill.
Nope, you're the roofie.
I do not think you're the guy that gets him in the van, Scott. I do not think I've heard a more nerdier bunch of guys try to rap like we did last week, or in Brian's case, a more redneckier guy try to rap. Keep up the good work, and yes, I know that redneckier is not a word, but it should be. I'm pretty sure in the hills of Georgia, it probably is a word.
We've gotten praised before about our rapping, so shush.
I don't know why.
Exactly.
Because we're awesome.
They recognize awesomeness when they hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Hello.
Whose house? Ho's house.
Oh.
All right, Justin, you got the last one. You shut
right,
up. Let's move on.
This is from Michael B. He says, still listening to the episode, but I had to stop and rewatch the Hobbit trailer after comments about Smaug's eye. I think it's going to be fine. The eye is glowing, obviously the infernal evil of its soul, and there are a lot of shadows on the body as it peeks around the corner. This is what makes it seem animated, in my opinion. When we see the full sequence of Smaug, it's going to be fine. The trailer looks awesome. You know, I resaw the trailer when I saw Superman or Man of Steel for the second time.
Yep.
I don't know what the fuck y'all are talking about, because the head, even in shadow, looks fine. Looks perfectly fine. I have no idea what you're talking about.
If you
I thought it looked
talking.
Fine to me, too.
The eye looks fine. The head looks fine. You guys are so nitpicky, just trying to – they just making shit up.
Really? You're also the guy when I said, I can't believe they said Unleash the Hounds and Man of Steel. I don't see what you're talking about. What's wrong with that? That is the worst dialogue I can think of. Unleash the Hounds. That's something Jerry Seinfeld said in some
I
shitty
didn't say
commercial.
I like it. It's just it's not enough for it to stick in my head and make me think to mention it later. It's a line that came in, goes out.
I will say people just the like eye the eye plays better in the theater, definitely. So I will agree with him. I saw it in the theater, and it looks better in the theater than it did.
I saw it in the theater, and I think that the original cut that I saw of the trailer was it was super dark. Like, mm-hmm. You couldn't see anything but the eye. And the one in the theater, there's a lot more detail on the dragon's head, so.
All right, so you were wrong. Both of you were wrong. We can all move on. Thank you.
Okay. we're just getting used to what it feels like to be Justin. So, yeah, it takes us a while to adapt. Normally, you stay through the credits
route. I've had 40 years.
Normally, you can stay through the credits route. It takes this week. We're going to hit that Superman ending after the credits, so. Stick around for that. TheHollywoodOutsider.com's website. Leave us a message or text us at 818-814-6426. Email is feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. All this stuff is in the show notes, too, so you can always find it there. Listen and subscribe for free on iTunes. Listen on your Stitcher Radio app or through our RSS feed. And please, if you got an iTunes account, do us a favor. Run out there and just give us a 5 or 4-star review. We would really appreciate it. It helps us show. A 5 would be more preferable. And we're also RockfordCollegeRadio.com Thursdays from 4 to 6. Thanks, Brian, Justin, Scott. Thanks, all three of you, for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yep. We're doing a group thank you because we're on,
all right.
We're on long.
Ready, guys? 1, 2, 3. Thank you.
A little more Ted and I.
Jesus. And remember, guys, the next – oh, we are coming up on our 100th episode. So if you would like to send us your favorite bits that you can remember or your favorite episodes are shut the fuck up, then please do so. Send it to us in the next couple of weeks. So next time you go to a theater, as long as you're not with these bitches, because they will talk through the whole movie, buy popcorn.
You get a free bowl of soup with that hat.
What?
Okay. Don't listen any further if you have not seen Man of Steel or you don't want to be spoiled, because we are going to talk about the very end of the movie. Okay, you've had enough time to pause. We're going to discuss the ending that has all the world of the internets all riled up. At the very end of Man of Steel,
Superman kills someone.
Shh! Superman
he kills Lois Lane.
He kills Zod. Superman kills Zod. Some geeks have thrown up their hands and called it damn un-American. Or American.
What?
Un-American?
Un-American.
To kill somebody?
All the time.
That's a national pastime.
No, baseball? Shit, you don't get much more American. Killing fuckers.
So here's the question, because geeks are freaking out. What did you think of changing the character, one who never kills, to killing the last of his kind so brutally?
I'm fine with it. This whole movie's dark. They even set it up early in the movie when he talks about his you know, Kevin Costner's. So he said, because he asked him something about, you know, I forget the exact lines or whatever, but he does address the fact, like, what if I've got to kill somebody? And he's like, hey.
Or where he said, should I have let him die? And he said, maybe.
Should I have let him die? There you go. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's not like he just is just enraged in anger and just randomly kills him. He's killing him to protect his adoptive planet's citizens. So it's the, you know. The ends, whatever, not the ends, just by the means. But anyway, it's just, it's the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, I mean, Brian's completely right. Zod tells him, I will do this to the entire planet. I'm going to kill everyone. He gives Superman really no choice. Superman, like Brian said, it's not anger, it's not rage, it's not, I'm going to get vengeance. It's to save people, save humanity, you know, represented in this little family in the corner of this building. But really, Zod's talking about killing everyone. And it's not as though Superman is suddenly being turned into a murderer. This is the first film and really his first fight as Superman. I think what it does, though, is it sets up why he would be so hesitant to kill in future stories, because of after what he had to do, perhaps swearing he would never do it again. Because he looks, at least to me, genuinely distraught that he had to resort to killing Zod, and just in that huge release of emotion, I don't think he'll ever kill anyone again. And this would be the reason why I think it's just fine.
I mean, not to mention the hundreds of thousands of people that died in that fight, but
well, shit, you know, you gotta break some
eggs.
That's
a really good point.
And that was all on Zod anyway. So come on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's all.
Oh,
Zod's
if the bad
fault.
Guy kills him, it's okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's what bad guys do.
I don't. I don't have any hardcore attachment to the originality of Superman and that kind of thing. I just liked it for what it was. I didn't.
Didn't he kill Zod in Superman 2? Or they alluded to the fact that he killed Zod in Superman 2? Like, didn't they drop him off a cliff or something?
Guys, you know, it has been so long since I've seen it. I don't exactly remember.
Yeah. Because he tricked him into going into that chamber where he, where Zod lost his powers.
Mm-hmm.
And then he like picked him up by his neck or what have you, and then like dropped him down that ice cliff, and he just disappeared into that foggy, smoky stuff.
So he probably fell into a little ice jail cell,
ice prison,
yeah, where he's still at, waiting to get out. And he's like,
he didn't get his fucking neck snapped.
That was pretty graphic.
Super snapped.
Here's the way I feel about it, and I know a lot of people are saying it goes against the character. I think there's several iterations where he comes close to the same thing. I realize the character never kills. They did hold to that in the Batman movies, except for he sure let people die. I mean, he let Liam Neeson die, but whatever. As long as they use this to set up the fact that he will never kill again, I'm okay with it. If he killed somebody in the next movie, I would never watch another Superman movie. And I mean that. I'm not just saying that as protesting. That would kill the character in terms of these films for me. But if they set it up to say, here's why, like to give you a reason, a justification for why he will never kill again. I killed once and it took out the last person of my species.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that would really resonate with me. And if they played that out, especially in the next movie, that would be a wonderful way to go.
Yeah, like flashbacks to that shot and the torment that he went through.
But what I don't get is why people are still stuck in how Superman should be from 1954. You know, it's evolved. It's a different kind of character. It's a different world, really. I mean, all they've done is adapt it to now. And you know, it's different. It's not the Christopher Reeve of your youth. It's not nostalgia. You know, I think some people look at it through nostalgic glasses, and it's not fair to this current character. And I don't see what all the hype is about.
Come on, man. If they made the Evil Dead remake with not gory, wouldn't that bother you?
It would. But this most recent one took a different kind of take on it a little bit. And I still, you know, was dying to see it. But also the same people were behind it. If you took Spider-Man and he killed somebody, I would probably be in uproar about it. Because it's definitely a character much more true to my heart. But does that bother you guys as Brian, especially Brian and Justin, because you guys were fans of the comic. Does that bother you as comic book fans?
No.
No. Not at all. I mean, how many times have comic books been reinventing the characters over the decades? You know, the further we go away from the original, you know, iteration of it, the most times the darker they get. Mm. So to me, it's just one of those little things that they do to make it more movie friendly. And for me, as a comic book enthusiast, it worked to me. It fit the movie. It didn't feel like it was unnecessary. It fit the story. It just fit the character. Even
he had no other choice,
right? And that's why I've got no problem at all with it. I mean, again, like I said, he just wasn't a raving lunatic. It was, look, if I don't do this, everybody is going to die. So not just his family right here. But
you know what I had a bigger problem with than that? I didn't really have a problem with that. I had a problem with Lois Lane knowing exactly who he was from the get-go.
I like it.
I like that now you don't have that stupid thing where, hey, I've got glasses on, I look different. Mm-hmm. I like that. But the fact that she knows who he is right away, and it's just so quick and falls right in. I mean, it's so convenient is the word I'm looking for.
I think I'm with Justin. I actually like that one.
Yeah, I kind of like it too.
Why do you guys like it?
They spent so much time with the flashbacks and all the other stuff and all the history building and his current dealing with coming out, so to speak, as Superman,
mm-hmm.
that there's so much other stuff going on. The last thing you need is to muddy the waters even more with this little back and forth of, is he really Superman or is he really Clark Kent? He's got pretty hair and some glasses, but I don't think he's big enough to wear a cape and fly around. I don't know.
She's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. To me, it has always seemed incredibly stupid that she didn't know.
Yep.
How do you work side by side with the motherfucker and not know? I mean, it's ridiculous, and they completely avoid that now. Which I'm so glad that doesn't have to be a plot element of, oh, Lois, what's over there? As he takes off to find a booth to change in.
I got to say, I love the cheesy line of, welcome to the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that.
He's just so kind of hot. That bugged me.
It was a little cheesy.
Oh, no, my niece, she's 14. When that woman said that the movie Money, she goes, uh-huh.
I think a lot of women said that.
God, every time he was on screen, she was like, oh, my God.
I did kind of a little bit. When they showed him the shirtless, I'm like, you can really look like that if you work out that much?
He ain't got nothing on Hugh Jackman. That motherfucker ripped.
I don't know. They could have a nice little workout.
Oh, I know what I want to ask you guys, because this is the first time they did the whole promotion thing with Walmart. Did you guys all go to the Thursday showing?
I went to the Thursday showing.
Yeah. Hey. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Sweatpants. A lot of sweatpants.
A lot of kids.
Oh, I kind of regretted doing that.
Yeah, you hate to say when things are stereotyped, but that was a stereotype. All the way.
I had someone behind me that got out of the movie at least 4 times, and every time they put their hand on the back of my headrest to, like, work their way through and put all their weight on it.
Squeeze their fat ass out of the seat.
Oh.
Before we go, and we are spoiling things, I wanted to ask you guys, I know that there were a number of Easter eggs put into this film. I only caught 2 of them. Did any of you guys catch any?
I caught a couple of LexCorp.
Mm-hmm.
Things, and I caught the Wayne Industries satellite.
Yeah, if you blink, you missed it. But on the satellite that Zod and Superman crashed through, there is a Wayne Industries logo on it, which
really
was really fucking cool.
I saw the LexCorp one, but I didn't see the Wayne.
Yep, That's cool.
Because I was looking for something.
Second.
I was looking for something Batman related because I wanted to see it. But that's awesome.
Well, it's time for us to get out of here, guys, but thanks a lot for everybody listening to the show, and definitely go see Man of Steel. We all liked it, so check it out.